Accession number 32117, Reel 1.
Okay, this is Victoria Kingston interviewing Marie-Lise Ruman on the 23rd of June 2009. So if we could just start a bit about your childhood and where you were born and when you were born.
I was born in Bucharest on the hottest day of the year, saying quite a lot, and to an architect and his wife, who was very young still.
Okay.
She was 22.
And you had siblings?
And I had a brother, a little bit older,
okay,
who's very much an Englishman.
And could you explain a bit about the background of coming to Britain in 1940?
Yes. My mother made friends with an English lady and was much influenced by her. And she thought education in Romania, okay, you learned properly. There were good teachers. But the sort of culture and the freedom were too great, and you'd be endlessly sitting in cafes, even aged 14, you know, and sort of not doing what they do in England, especially not at public schools. She was hell-bent on Stowe, because her friend was. And, you know, they sort of told her a lot about the sport and the way they train your character and all that. So he was down for his prep school, and that was already going to start in 1939. And quite a lot of Romanians did the Orient Express backwards and forwards to prep school.
School train.
Yes. But found it a bit lonely, because it's long. It's, I think, two nights. So that's really how we began to think about England. And also, my father was anxious. Do you know Paddy Lee Fermor? He has a wonderful page in his first book saying he knew how dangerous the Russians were because he'd lived in Eastern Europe. He'd lived in Hungary and Romania. And in the West, they didn't. They sort of trusted them. And lots of people thought it was a good thing and had no idea. We had a very good idea that it was simply awful what was going on. So he wanted us out of the way, further west. Further west, as far west as possible. And I stayed all the same. My mother took my brother to England, and lo and behold, the war started while she was there. And then she came all the way back through Europe a few months later. It was the phony war. France hadn't fallen. Romania was fine. Lots to eat and no bombing and nothing. It hadn't joined the war. And I remember her coming back, and they then decided I should go to England too. Made more sense if we three were out. And my father just couldn't bear to leave. He had a good job. He's a well-known architect. He was a professor at the university. He wrote books, you know, all the things that later were going to be... You can't do any of them. And you're an enemy of the people. Just because we happen to have had an old name.
Mm.
An ancient name. And thank God I came. Because I think it was very nasty after.
So you were in England, the three of you.
The three of us were in England. And we stayed with this friend of my mother's throughout the war. She had a friend with her too. And her husband was one of the people who went with the little boats to Dunkirk. And we listened to Churchill, and it's so funny because we all spoke French because my mother hadn't learned English yet, that sort of thing.
But French was commonly spoken in Romania.
Yes, yes, but it was quite fun that, you know, two English women and a Romanian were speaking French. So that was how we came to England and stayed in England, really.
And were your views of England entirely positive at this stage?
Yes. I still are in that sense, that England didn't do all it could have done for the East. That's where I argue quite a lot with my son-in-law, who's Irish, and a few others. But yes, it was very positive. I loved it.
And what was English school like?
English convent school was very, very nice in Shropshire. Sort of an old, you know, it was still time... It was 44 when I went to boarding school, and it was somebody else's big country house, and a few nuns and us. It was very nice, and a huge, you know, huge grounds, very lovely grounds. So that was idyllic. It was jolly cold during the war, and still very cold after, but it was lovely. I'm glad I went.
What news from your father? What filtered through?
It was surprising. It really was surprising how those censored. You know, the letters, I don't know how many. I've been translating them for my children. They're all in French. But I think most of them came. I've got 66 letters written during the war. No, a few were written after, but as he was in prison much of the time, there aren't so many after the war. I've got them right through the war. And they came, I think they came through the Red Cross and through Switzerland. And I'm not quite sure, because you can't always tell, but I can tell where the ones that are censored. And the ones that aren't are usually during the time of the British mission, Allied mission, where I think my father had friends and they took them out, uncensored.
And do you get a sense from his letters of the, as the Second World War receded, of the Soviet threat looming? I mean,
yes.
He obviously was already
yes.
aware of that.
Yes, because we changed sides. We were on the German side. He had to do the Russian campaign as a war correspondent. And the Russian campaign for us was with the Germans. And then the king managed to change change sides at the last minute in 44 and come in on the Allied side. And was very fair to the Germans, said, you can go, we won't kill you, just get out. But, yes, he wrote, you know, there aren't many, there'd be one in 1944 and one in 1945, and then a lot telling you how awful things are getting in 46, and just about two or three in 47, and then total silence till 54,
when he was arrested
in 48, yes, trying to leave secretly. It was a shame.
So how did you, I mean, you hadn't seen him for all these years. How did you
feel about
him?
I never saw him again. I felt quite strongly, because while my mother was away, it was quite a long period. It was from August to March that she was in England, in the phony war and the beginning of the war. And I saw a lot of him. He took it quite seriously, you know, that he was a father. I had a pretty nice Austrian nanny who turned out to be spying for the Germans. We knew, because she kept going to the embassy, so we were sure.
Spying on your father, or more generally?
Generally, because quite a few people came to the house. I don't know how she thought she'd pick it up. And I don't suppose any of it was particularly useful to them, but anyway, she looked after me, and my father always said goodnight, and we had lunch together.
So after the war, you went to Newnham College, Cambridge, is that right?
After the war, I had to swat a bit, and then I went, because the convent taught you good French, but not an awful lot of general, you know, one had to do a general paper and things like that. And my maths were no good at all, so I had to do biology quickly, because this sort of thing dates you terribly. Stopped. But, yes, and then I got into Newnham, and I didn't get into Oxford. It was sort of more demanding, I think. I tried both. And I had 3 years there, which were terribly hard work. Girls were new to the place, you know, and one was competing. And it was very nice, though. I made a lot of friends. And there were a lot of communists sitting in the college near me, and we used to have... And then they'd say, yes, but you can't, you know, with you it's emotional, you don't know. So, but they were quite nice, I must say.
Did you know, what did you want to move back to Romania? I mean, what did you think the future held for you?
I knew I couldn't. And I was telling Frank today, because I don't often think of it, but on VE Day, we had the day off. The nuns gave us the day off, which meant that we had a picnic and all those nice things. And I remember going off into the wooded bit to cry, because I knew what was going to happen. You couldn't not. The Russians were already in Bucharest since 44. And I just knew what would happen. And I doubted that we'd go back. And I doubted that my father would make it. He was so sort of, I don't know, I can't understand that he didn't try and get out. I think he was so fond of his work, and he thought, oh, it won't happen to me, like a lot of Jews.
Yes, you can see it happening all around you, but you somehow think you're...
Yes, you might be all right. I think he even says in one of his letters, I have friends in the government. But nothing helped in the end. It got worse and worse.
And your mother, what was her attitude?
Her attitude was that she would have liked to go back, but no way did she want to leave England, so she was torn. She loved... And she'd taken a course, because she knew her money was, the days were numbered, that she'd have any money. And he managed to send her, she was the one who had the money, he managed to send her things, sums, and then he couldn't anymore. And he said, organize yourself, do something, because I can't send you anymore. So she did a course in chicken farming. And then she and the friend who got us to England, really, and the other friend all bought a farm in Kent, and my mother had the large field and the barn, so she had her chickens, and she had just enough money to start all that. And then the other friends did market gardening together. I rather think they were lesbians, those two, but I've never known.
It sounds very enterprising.
it was a very nice thing to do. It's a lovely old bit of East Kent, you know, a lovely old house, and very, very nice, not built up at all even now around it. So I think my mother was actually very happy, but the dream of, you know, her dream was always that he'd come. And I've got her diaries, and I've got a lot of her poetry, and it's unbearably sad. I only read it occasionally because I know I'll cry. But her diaries are fairly positive. She tells you quite a lot of things. And then she says, I would like to go back. I would like to go back, but I must keep a foothold here. And then it became clear it was impossible. You couldn't. You'd be mad, you know. Anybody, I think, would be mad. Except perhaps if you were convinced communist, but even then I'm not sure. That, you know, they hated the West. And in the end, what was the worst thing you could do was to be in touch with the West. I think that's why he had some of the worst prisons of all. I'm sure of it, actually. I've seen other sort of books and things, and it's usually anything. I mean, my uncle, all he did once was at a birthday party say, oh yes, I know that. Somebody was saying something. He said, I know that. I heard it on the BBC. And that was such a mistake. Somebody gave him away, and 13 years? Unbelievable. He didn't do them all, to be fair, but the first, his friend had more than that. I think they both were reprieved at some stage, but there was a sort of softening when the dictator died. He was called Gheorghiu Dej, awful man. And then we had the terrible Ceausescu, but he wasn't awful straight away.
And when was this sort of rapprochement?
64. He was quite good even. He disliked the Russians, and he let people earn more and go. He didn't let them go. He didn't allow them to go abroad, but they could earn more. And people came out of prison. My father was dead by then. But, and then he got frightful, sort of, in the late 70s. He went to China and thought, this is brilliant. The Cultural Revolution, he thought, was brilliant. And he wanted to do it in Romania, but several of his people in the government didn't want him to. So it never was quite as bad. And the worst time was really 48 to 64. Where they used the Chinese method of friend torturing friend, and one of them quite often jumped out of the window. You know? Oh, it was awful, really awful. I wished I hadn't read it. To get into the EU, the Romanians had to do a sort of apology, quite rightly, I think, about their communism. And this, you could send on the internet, you could send for the bit you wanted, and I sent for penitentiaries. And then I wished I hadn't. They're sort of things you don't want to know and you don't want to imagine. But I don't know that they happened in his particular one, you know. Yeah.
So you left, when you left Cambridge, what did you want to do with your life?
I think mainly I was very, very keen on my literature, and I wanted to get other people keen on literature. So I went and taught in a terribly tough school in Bromley, where in the end I wished I was the ticket collector at Charing Cross rather than teaching. It was really tough. So I lasted about 2 terms, and then found a tutorial college where you really get sort of 16, 17, 18 year olds. And that was okay. And that's what I went on doing at various ones, you know, when I married too. And that was lovely, I liked that.
And what did you find, the people around you, what was their perception of the Iron Curtain and what was happening behind it?
I think Churchill had said it, hadn't he? He was the one who said it. So I think they knew about it because of East Germany. But, you know, they'd had a tough time because it had been war, and then we were fairly short of things. We were never hungry or anything. But I think they were out to enjoy themselves. They didn't really want to talk about it or hear it. And I didn't terribly want to say too much, I think. But there's a certain pride. You don't want to say, well, actually, I can't come to your dance because we haven't got any money whatsoever. Once I was earning, it was better. I can't say I remember being particularly indignant at the time that people didn't know. But looking back, I think they didn't, till Hungary really showed one. And I think people were awfully good then. They helped a lot.
So this was not just left-wingers, it was everybody?
Everyone. It was everybody, yes. Left-wingers don't want to know. They don't want to know very often. There's an author, she's very good, Georgina Harding, who wrote a book called In Another Europe. And she went and she bicycled all the way from The Hague to Romania, I think. And she bicycled in Romania, which was a bit dangerous. And when she came back, she was talking to some of her friends from Sussex University. And she said, without my saying anything, she said, but you know, they didn't want to know. They were actually cross with my book for showing what was happening. So there was a bit of this. And you know, when Ceausescu was killed in 89, various people you met would tell you, oh yes, but the old age homes, I mean, ours are awful. They had no notion of what a nasty place and how poor everybody was.
Okay, so could we talk a bit about, more about your father, if that's all right?
Yes, yes.
You said you carried on getting letters for a bit. And
yes, I've got them all here. They're going to be, I hope, published in French in France. But we'll see if they really will be.
He was in prison from when?
He was in prison first from 1948 to 1953. And I have the letter in 1953 when he let my mother know. And there's no signature, there's a sort of initial, but you couldn't make it out quite. And all he says is, I've come back from my journey. And all the time I was away, I thought of you. And I hope the children are fine, something like that. And finished, nothing more.
He hadn't been allowed to write all the time he was in prison.
No. And for a time he was in solitary confinement and wasn't allowed to write or read. And that's when he began to study how memory works. And I've just translated a whole lot of essays he wrote about that. So I think he found that fascinating, but he does make the rather disturbing comment that he realized that memory was fantastic in keeping him alive and things, and he could remember more and more the more he tried. But he said, every now and then I came back to the present because of physical discomfort. So I knew, you know, not all was all right. And then we didn't know much. After that, it went very quiet. He was rearrested in 53 for a year, and I think he was on the sort of rather ghastly canal they'd built. And a lot of people died who were not strong enough. And he survived, but he wasn't so well anymore, and he had an accident while he was there, and so he limped afterwards, and he took blood thinning things and things like that. And in the end, he had a most awful hemorrhage, and whereas in the West they would have saved him, out there they didn't. He was up in the north of Romania.
Was he out of prison by this stage?
He was out of prison, yes. They put him in for another year. 53, they rearrested him very quickly, and then he came out in 54, and the next letter is in 55. 54 there's a brief one, and 55 there's a very long one, lovely one, about how when you're on your own like that, you begin to not need time or place, or, you know, that you begin to know what's going on in some strange way. Some people would poo-poo it, but he's very sure that he knew exactly what we were doing and my mother was doing, that he had a sort of extra sixth sense by being alone. And then I think after that he was very wary, because anything to do with the West, you know, could put him in again. And we had a friend, he wasn't really a friend, I met someone. God knows what he was doing. He was called Lord St. Oswald, and I think he did good works in Eastern Europe. And he went off, and his last thing he said to me was, I'll go and see your father. And I said, please, 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 please don't. And I think he did all the same. And my father took off that very night and went off, you know, to the far north, where luckily he had to inspect some monuments and things.
So he was still working?
He was given. You see, that's what's so odd. They hate him, they put him in prison, they call him an enemy of the people, they won't show his exhibition, they shut it after 2 days. But they left him for 18 months as almost the head of the conservation thing. And then they suddenly said, well, we can't have two of the old families. Romania had a sort of, like all countries, had a network of very old families who also had ruled the country before. They were always voted for, either one or there were at least six, seven of them. And there were two of these people, he and one other. And the other man had a sick mother. So my father thought, well, I should withdraw. And he was quite lucky, because the equivalent of an archbishop, they're called a metropolitan.
In the Orthodox Church?
Yeah, up in the north, in Yassi. It's a university town, which in my father's day was absolutely lovely, and I've got lots of watercolours that I managed to get that he made. He went up there, and this metropolite offered him to redesign the cathedral close, which he did. But unfortunately he died before it could finish with his hemorrhage. He lived like a monk, you know, with the monks, and he adored the work. I know, I've got two or three letters.
So it was a peaceful place.
As he couldn't join us, I think that was the best thing that could have happened. Mm. Though people say, you know, oh, he didn't get paid much, oh, he was spied on, oh, he was lonely. I'm not sure. I think the work meant a lot to him. He enjoyed it.
So the fact that he was from this distinguished family, even if he hadn't been, a free thinker and an intellectual,
yes,
that would have told against him anyway.
Yes.
It?
So yes.
He sort of had double crime.
Yes, I think so. That and us in England wasn't a help, having his family here. It must have got slightly better, I think. No, it didn't. He died. He died in 1960. I had Ileana, my first child, in 1961, and he knew that I was having a child and was terribly pleased, happy. So I always remember it's 1960. That he died, which was awful for my mother. But, it's sort of end of a dream, isn't it? You always think he will come.
And was your uncle his brother, the one who was also...
He was more an uncle by marriage. My mother's sister, I think I put that in my notes, we had to buy them out. And they were so awful that way. I think that may be Romanian, it's nothing to do with being a communist. They said, your husband might be there. You can fly out on whatever it was, April, I think, 1964. And your husband might be there. Her husband was still in prison. And he wasn't there. And I can understand if there was a big chance, but I bet they just said it to be nasty. And also she used to take him parcels. And it was 9 hours by train and 9 hours back. And they usually, quite often, didn't let her. Or there was a big queue and they said, go back to the end of the queue, just because of her name. She was another of these families. I wonder how many there are. There are about 10, I would think.
So this is your mother's sister's?
Yes, yes.
And so she got to fly to England?
She got to fly to England via Brussels. I remember it was a Belgian plane. And my mother went to fetch them, because it was her and the two boys, who were much more expensive than the woman. Yes. They were 20 and 16 at the time. And the 20-year-old hadn't been allowed to study, because that was another way of... You had to... I don't know what you had to be to study. You had to have a father who was a labourer, I think. So they came, and my mother, you know, sort of looked after them with that wonderful friend of ours, English lady.
And what about your uncle? What happened?
And my uncle had longer than my father, and he was younger. And he had much longer in prison, and he died young. I mean, it sort of did something to his health, and he lost his teeth in prison. And my aunt went to the trial. She happened to find out when they were being tried, and she didn't recognize her husband. I think she recognized my father, and they'd got so thin. And then they were allowed to have clothes sent to them and a bit of food. But I think it was pretty awful altogether. And I know for certain that, because I've read a lot, that quite a lot of the prisons, they really didn't want you to survive. A bit like the Gulag.
So your uncle never came to England?
So he did come to England. He got a job at the BBC. He came about 3 months after his wife. And was terribly happy in London. He had to spend nights with us and with another friend, because he often worked night shifts. And he would like to live in London, and my aunt instead said, no, let's go to France. And so when he retired, they went to France, and he died the next year. He was about 63, I think, 64. And I think his heart and sort of, he had bad lungs, and I'm sure that's to do. The Danube Canal was particularly nasty in that way. He often stood in water, and there were, I don't know, it was cold.
And that was what they made the labourers, the
yes,
do.
Yes, vast amounts. That's all in Professor Deletan's book. He seems to have researched it very well.